Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 117th episode of the Manor Podcast. I'm your co-host, Roger Bodie, joined as always with my best friend and other co-host, Michael Hamilton. Michael, we did it. We went back to back. We were the R and M, technically in the order of winners. But I won a ProQuest. You won a ProQuest. We're both going to London, you and me, and we're qualified for the Pro Tour in London now.
Yeah, we did it. Good job.
Yeah.
Both of us, I guess.
I did it in draft, despite all my complaining and moaning and bitching and whining about draft over the past few weeks, and you did it in class constructed.
Yeah, your Acilio deck in the top eight is, I'm going to remember that one for a while. It was really sweet. You're just counting some blessings.
Yeah, and saving some thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I posted it on Blue Sky. Nobody uses Twitter anymore. Twitter's dead. But I did post the deck list.
What's Twitter? You mean X?
I don't use any of those old club. You mean MySpace at this point? But I posted it to my Blue Sky account, and yeah, it had three red open the floodgates, and so basically it was just like flash, open the floodgates, or flash, activate Volzor, open the floodgates, four arcane, draw two cards, and if you don't have your action, or if you didn't have the flash, you could go like some other lightning card, like a sigil. Volzor, open the floodgates, draw two cards, you don't have an action point, but then you can count your blessings or save the thought and play an instant if you don't have your action point. So it was a cool little idea I put together after I picked up my third count your blessings sometime in pack two.
Yeah. That's a lot of count your blessings. I don't think I've ever had three count your blessings in a limited deck.
Yeah. There's like a lot of rares in this deck. There's three count your blessings, rares, two save your thoughts, rares. Two Chorus of the Amphitheaters, rares. But I guess that's it. No Majestics, nothing crazy aside from that. Just a lot of instant rares.
Yeah, and I do think that Chorus of the Amphitheater is usually worse than Photon Splicing. Maybe not all the time, but usually it's worse because Photon Splicing costs one less and blocks for one more. And Chorus, your only real benefit is it gets to apply to every spell this turn, but most spells you're going one wide. Occasionally you'll go two wide, but not that often.
Yeah, I really think it'd be interesting to see if you could put together like a Chorus of the Amphitheater. Like, ideally, like what I wanted to do with it was be like Chorus of the Amphitheater, flash, open the floodgates, flash, Chorus of the Amphitheater, open the floodgates. Like, just kind of like storm off, you know, it's like a very particular setup, but like that was kind of the idea between like using the flashes to get my action points back. And then there's things like Trailblazing Aether as well, like just kind of like after if they're buffed by Chorus, you'll just get your action point anyways. So,
yeah, Chorus into Trailblazing is kind of sick, especially if your opponent has no prevention. So, you know, you're going to get the amp on the next thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Now I'm just like imagining a turn where you go like discard Chorus, play Trailblazing Aether, play another Trailblazing Aether, and then play like Etchings or something. That'd be a sick turn.
Yeah, that's the dream. But didn't line up in that draft, but what did line up was good enough to get the job done.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to talk about your Viscerai deck that you won with or no? I guess we're going to talk about a Viscerai deck. But
I can talk a little bit about it. I played Viscerai at the ProQuest. I really like Rune Rager Swarm. It's a really good card. Played 9 copies of it. Rune Rager Swarm people triggers your Malefic Incantations to turn on all the things that need Rune Chance in play to be cheaper, like Drawn from the Dark Dimension, Rune Flash, and what's the 3 for 6? Amplify the Arknight. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I love Rune Rager Swarm. Card sick. Who knew Blue Head Jeb that blocked 3 would be a card that I'm like excited to put in my constructed deck.
That sounds like exactly like the card you'd be excited to put in your construction deck.
Okay, maybe Yellow Head Jab that blocks 3. That's the one that might be more questionable.
Yeah, fair.
I do like blue block 3s. So that is a thing that I have liked for quite a while. I specifically like the new Viscerai decks because they block so well. Deck is like 40 plus 3 blocks. So many of your cards is block 3. Not your Malefic Incantations, but that's okay. You always want to play those anyway, so don't worry about them.
Yeah, they're meant to just sit there and look pretty on the battlefield. So they go
and make Rune Chance. Yeah, but I the Swiss was 5 rounds. I played against 2 Florians, 2 Auroras, and I'm trying to remember who else I played. 2 Florians, 2 Auroras, and an Azalea. And then top eight, I played against the Florian again, and then you on new, and then our other Wolfpack teammate Raj also on new. So yeah, it was a good run.
Yeah, for sure. Good job, buddy.
Thank you.
But that's London's future Michael and Raja problems. We got to focus on current meta Michael and Roger problems with this meta. And thankfully, they've been posting lots of sweet deck lists on the Flesh and Blood website for us to go over and study up to make sure we know what's going on in this metagame.
All right, let's take a look. Where are we starting?
I need to learn about new. I played new. I didn't win my pro quest, so I need to learn from a new that did win a pro quest. So, Loxana Ekka SP won with new over in Bali. So, I would say the equipment looks pretty traditional. Nothing too crazy going on there. Scale Paler, Spider's Bite. The big new upgrade that Assassins did get with the release of Rosetta, there's the piece of Widowclaw Tarsus and Widowclaw Respirator. So the Tarsus are the arms and the Respirator is the headpiece. So getting the Spell Void and Arcane Barrier on the same piece is actually like really powerful and can lead to a lot of really interesting end games and situations where it's much harder for heroes to like close the game out with arcane damage against you.
Yeah, one thing I didn't realize about these Widow pieces is you can use Arcane Barrier and Spell Void on the same instance of damage. So let's say hypothetically, completely, I'm just going to come up with a very random example off the top of my head. A Kano casts Aether Wildfire against you. Then if you have two of these Widow Claw pieces in play, you can actually AB2 and Spell Void 2 to prevent 4 total damage. And then that combined with his Arcane Lantern actually gives AB3. So that would block 5 damage off a Wildfire if you have a full blue to pitch for it.
Yeah, Kano went from being one of Assassin's like really good matchups, or Kano was really good into Assassin's, and now I think Assassin's are one of the matchups Kano should be dreading the most because of these Arcane Barrier Spell Void pieces just make it really hard for you to get comboed out of the game.
Yeah, and I think it's especially interesting because like a lot of the time against like, let's say Leviah, for example, Leviah, who has access to basically Spell Void 2 on every slot if she wants it, but a bunch of Spell Void, but maybe less Arcane Barrier. A lot of the time, Kano's will play like a more value-y game where they're just trying to like do big things turn after turn because the Leviah can't Arcane Barrier it. But with these Arcane Barrier Spell Void combo pieces, you can't really do that either because they still have access to Arcane Barrier 3 on top of getting the Spell Void.
Yeah. Definitely underrated them when they first came out, but the more I played with them, the more I'm like, oh, these are sweet pieces of equipment.
Yeah. And I don't think new is the main reason that we've seen Kano kind of falling off, but it certainly doesn't help to have like what used to be a very good matchup become a lot harder.
Yeah, for sure. If we look over to reds, we can see some pieces of spice poking through. So we got the Command and Conquerors, obviously, and all kind of here or there. Still got three Oasis Respites because really, really don't want to lose to Kano. just AB3, Spell Void 2, 3 Oasis. Just nope, not today, Kano's. But the most interesting piece of technology here is Cut Down to Size, which is the card from Outsiders. It costs 2, has 6 power, blocks 2, and when it hits the hero, there are 4 more cards in our hand. They discard a card.
Yeah, I'm surprised to see this in new. It's a card that has almost been good enough for Azuri, I feel like, but just not quite good enough. And then new, it seems even more out of place where you can't like surprise them and swap into it. But looks like it worked out well here.
Yeah. And I thought maybe at first it might be a budget consideration, but no, we still have copies of the Weakest Link, Command and Conquer, Erase Face, all the other traditionally good 2v6. Just need even more 2v6s, and when you start looking around, I guess eventually you'll find Cut Down to Size.
Yeah. Yeah, and you mentioned Command and Conquer, Erase Face, and Weakest Link. This deck just really wants to play 2v6s, it looks like.
Mm-hmm. Just get that good old 2v6 value. Have a tunic up, you can go 2v7, you know, dagger, tunic, play your 2v6, clean line.
Yeah, and we see basically all the attack reactions that you'd expect at red, other than your lovely Razor Reflex, but there's two copies of Hiss, two copies of Venomous Bite, and three copies of Just the Nick. So
yeah, kind of, that's all standard. I'm a crazy person that doesn't play Venomous Bite. Everybody else still loves Venomous Bite.
Yeah, the 2-2 split, I don't know if that's typical, but I actually found that sometimes Venomous Bite is better, sometimes Hiss is better. It really depends if you need the action point or you just want the damage. And then like having that kind of thing where like you don't, your opponent doesn't know if you're gonna give it +3 or +4. That is pretty valuable, I think, with the Venomous Bite. Sometimes just like your opponent blocks in a way that they can prevent you bumping it up by 3, and Venomous Bite just lets you bump it to 4, which is significantly more than 3 when it's pushing an on hit, but 3 wouldn't.
True. And then if we look over in the yellows, there's even a copy of A Spreading Plague floating around.
Yeah. That one has spots where it's very good. I think I've seen several screenshots of Talishar games where it gives 5 or 6 Blood Rot Pox tokens, but the floor on this card is quite low.
Yeah, the floor on the card is that it does nothing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a yellow do nothing in your deck. And on average, you'll maybe get 1 or 2 Blood Rots off of it. So if that's good enough into a matchup like Enigma in particular, those Blood Rots could be particularly annoying for her to deal with and still keeping around and attacking with like the ward stuff. So it might be a hedge there.
Yeah.
We look over to the blues. 8 chi, so still a very heavy chi build. Chi is still the reason to be new, it seems like. And then just a bunch of 1-power attacks to go with your Justinic.
And, yeah, there's 15, which I think is more than I've usually seen. I usually see 9 to 12, and there's 15 picked pieces, Art of Desire, and Infect are the 3 that are like not always played. And then, of course, there's the 3 Bonds and the 3 Persuasive Prognosis that are basically in every new deck.
Yeah, I like 15, actually, if you're going to go with playing Justinic, just because 12 can make it a little sketch sometimes to Arsenal Justinic. Sometimes you can just be like, oh, I'll see a blue 1-power thing. And with putting Justinic in your arsenal, you just go 2 or 3 turn cycles without seeing it, and your arsenal is just clogged with this unusable card. So just a hedge there. I don't mind having extra attacks in the deck.
Yeah, makes sense. And the other thing that goes well with 15 of these 1-power blues is a card that I've seen a lot, but this deck is notably not playing, Looking for Scrap. Just making sure you have the fuel to it to be able to attack with a 1-for-5 go again. But no copies of Looking for Scrap here. I feel like we've kind of talked about this before, but it feels to me like new is pretty bad against Enigma, and I think this deck is just kind of not really focusing on beating that matchup. It has picked pieces, but that's like the only really tool to fight Enigma I see in this deck.
Yeah. So my brain's kind of turning. I'm turning and burning here with this new deck because, so we take a step back. What is being run over Looking for Scrap? It's those cut down to size. And what's actually kind of good into Enigma right now are poppers. A lot of Enigma lists are running 3 Phantasmaclasms to really push damage until they find their combo, have their piece of disruption. So it might be that the extra poppers help mitigate the Phantasmaclasm damage better than just trying to race with something like Looking for Scrap. And then you're just trying to manage the board with like the Spreading Plague, your attack reactions, and just kind of like your traditional new game. That's kind of the working theory I might be able to suss out behind it. But yeah, that's kind of like I had to put it all together on the fly, that would be my rationale for seeing the cut down the size over Looking to Scrap.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Enigma is a hero that like a lot of the time she wants to just take all your damage and build a board. So having cut down to size, I guess the downside is if she can play any of her cards as an instant after it hits, then you can respond to the trigger and not have to discard. But
when this hits a hero, if they have, so it's like there's an intervening if clause, the trigger goes on the stack and then it checks upon resolution for having 4 cards.
Yep. Yeah. The trigger actually, so I actually learned this recently because it comes up with Viscerai with the non-attack action that you can play as an instant if they've taken arcane damage. So like if you lead with Rune Rager Swarm, for example, and you have a rune chant play and they take that rune chant, you can cast Succumb to Temptation before the Viscerai trigger resolves from the Rune Rager Swarm, because the Viscerai trigger always goes on the stack and it's always going to resolve whether you've met the condition or not. It just checks on resolution if you've met the condition.
Yeah. Because it has the intervening if, I believe it is called.
Yeah. And I guess coming from magic, magic would usually only put them on the stack if the condition was met, and then they would also only resolve if the condition was met, versus in Flesh and Blood, it's different where it always goes on the stack and then it checks on resolution.
But this isn't a Josh Scott episode. This is a decklist deep dive episode. I'm ready to move off of new if you are, though.
All right. Three Warmongers Diplomacy. Very good against Azalea. Pretty good against Dio, and also solid against Viscerai. So I think it's a good time for that card.
Yeah. Warmongers stunks all on the rise. That's for sure.
Not my favorite that this card is good, but it's good. It's also like $90. All right. Ready to move on.
Now we got the Boogie Woman.
Boogie Woman.
Yeah. Okay. We got Powell Roman on Dash.io. Taking it down. We see some of these new armory decks already in the equipment slots over here. We got the Heavy Industry Gear Shift. And that's actually it. A lot of people have been running the chess piece from that, but here we're still seeing Tekla Foundry Heart, which I kind of like. I think Tekla Foundry Heart gives you a lot of filtering options and more consistent resources, and obviously sticks around for the whole game, whereas the other chess piece is destroyed once you use it. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely spots where the other chess piece is better than Tekla Foundry Heart, but the fact that you get both blocks out of Tekla Foundry Heart and you can use it several times, I think it's really strong in like aggressive races where they have on hits that matter, and you don't really need to push a giant turn to get your max V's and boom grenades over your opponent trying to block you out completely. So, and you also don't care very much about banishing extra cards from your deck and aggro mirrors a lot of the time. So Tekla Foundry Heart, I think it is quite strong. I think there potentially is room to play both, but yeah, I would not cut Foundry Heart from your deck.
Yeah. Looking over to the actual cards in the deck, though, you're not going to believe this, Michael. It appears to be a mix of items and boost cards.
Yeah, there's a few items that we maybe haven't traditionally seen or don't see all the time. There's three Backup Protocol Red, which is...
No, that's standard at this point.
You think three is standard? I think it's a good spark target, and there's spots where you want it. I never really liked three. I feel like it's kind of clunky, especially to draw it. There's two Dissolving Shields, which is...
Yeah, that's not standard.
Not standard, but very good against decks trying to hit you with on hits. Though, I'm not exactly sure what matchups they are for, but they are there. There's three TikTok clocks, which are very, very targeted at item mirrors, where you want to play TikTok clock and blow up your opponent's items by hitting them and taking out their items. There's also a few other tech cards, like there's two Dissolution Spheres that I think specifically is for Viscerai, I would guess, because it's
Get out of here, Viscerai.
Damage. Just hating on Viscerai. And then there's two Signal Jammers as well that I think are mostly for Viscerai and probably Azalea as well.
Kano.
Oh, yes. Yes. Very good against Kano. I seem to forget about this guy because I haven't seen a lot of Kano. But,
yeah. Two decks in a row that are just not about that Kano life.
Yeah. Huh. Signal Jammer is really hard to beat as Kano if it's in play, huh?
Yeah. I have. I tried. I was learning Kano, and then I was like, let's play Kano into Dashio, and I think you put out a Signal Jammer. I was like, I'm over this. I'm gonna try something else now.
Yes. And then of course there's the Cerebellum processors, which are very, very good, and a bunch of boom grenades. Those are just, I expect them to be in every deal list.
Yeah. Floating around too, there's a copy of Heist for the boost cards, Outpace, Pulse Wave Harpoon, some T-Bones, Twin Drive, 0 to 60s, and Zipper Hits. So pretty standard stuff.
Yeah, all the boost cards look the same to me. I guess Heist is like a little bit different, where it's like, here's a Zahn hit.
It was our spoiler card. We spoiled Heist.
We did. We had a sick video for that, but I don't love the card very much. I think like a lot of the time it's not even turned on, because how are you getting items in your vantage zone?
Boosting.
You're just playing them. Well, you play the first one you see off the top. So you need to find two in a turn.
Oh, there wasn't that other mechanic in the set that I've forgotten all about, that like you
scrap them?
Scrap them.
Yeah, there's no scrap cards though. In
you scrap actually, them and you heist true. Them.
There is one copy of Hyper Scrapper in this deck, which is a blue X spell that you banish X items from your graveyard to play.
Boom, you got your hyper scrapper, you go and then you got your heist and you do the thing. More than likely you're just boosting them though, but yeah.
Yeah, hyper scrapper, just a finisher, I guess. There's no way to give it dominate, I believe, so just a way to spend extra resources late game. Or anytime you draw it, I guess I need to
play. Yeah, no hyper drivers floating around in here. Okay. So Stashio flopping. Stashio did win this one, but it was the week one, so not a lot of representation overall, right?
Yeah, I do think that Dash or Dio is a hero that's like quite difficult to play perfectly. I think it's a deck that's very vulnerable to fatigue unless you're like really know what you're doing and have a lot of practice with it. And even though the deck has existed on Talishar, like, it's also a deck that's like playing games in paper is different from playing online. And like, as much as I try to do almost all of my testing online, I still feel like if you play a bunch of games on Talishar and then you go play in person, you're going to like make some silly mistakes that you maybe wouldn't online.
I forgot 2 or 3 tunic triggers on the weekend. It was so sad.
Yeah. Dio doesn't have to worry about tunic triggers, but I do think that's, it is easier to play. Or it's different. It's different. And you should practice both online and in person, I believe, to maximize your chance of doing well in these tournaments. So I think that'll hold her down. I do think that not all of Dio's matchups are like, woo, I'm your big favorite. I think like some of her matchups are hard. I think New, for example, is a deck that's pretty hard to beat as Dio. I think Florian, which is another deck we'll get to, is also quite tough.
Yeah. Okay. I don't have anything else to say about Dio, though, for the time. I'm excited to see how she does in her second week, because I think that'll inform a lot of the world's metagame. But like I said, I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah, I still expect Dio to be one of the most popular lists or decks at Worlds. And I think that with a couple extra weeks to practice with the deck, I think it'll be putting out better results. And
yeah.
High Octane is a really, really powerful card, especially with these Cerebellum processors.
True. Ready to move on to your wheelhouse here?
Yeah, move on to Viscerai. So, Emlyn Ingram took Viscerai to a ProQuest victory. Let's see.
Nothing too crazy going on. Not 5 hats, that's for sure.
There's a lot of crazy things going on in this list. So there's only 6 blues in the entire list. No, none of my lovely blue Rune Rager swarms made the cut here.
I was just talking about the equipment first. I was moving on to the cards in the deck.
Sorry, yes, equipment. Go.
Aether Ironweave, Face Purgatory, Find Alls, Grass, Reaping Blades, Creepers, Quill Hand. There's that. What's crazy there? Nothing. So I stand
so,
by
that. No copies of, I can't remember the name, the chess piece that has tempered to
Dyadic Carapace.
Yeah, Dyadic Carapace. No copies of that. But like I mentioned when I was jumping ahead to the cartoon deck, there aren't very many blues in this deck, so it's kind of hard to pitch to AB if you just only have 6 blues in your entire deck. So
a lot of bananas.
Okay.
Can pitch sure, a banana sure. to AB1.
You can. So you that I expect that's part of why. And then if you just don't care about the block 2 versus playing Iron Weaver Tunic, then it makes sense to not play it.
Yeah, this one's looking to just end the game as quick as possible, low to the ground.
Yeah, I believe this event was before Dio, so we see Face Purgatory as the only hat. I have been playing Balance of Justice into Dash IO. I think it's just like a slam dunk, really good card, because they're going to draw 2 cards at some point during the game, and getting extra cards great. This list is only on Face Purgatory as its only hat, so.
Yeah.
Card's very good though. Face Purgatory is a very strong card.
True.
Everything else looks pretty typical to me. Spellbound Creepers and then both gloves, the Grasp of the Arcanine and Quill Hand. So, yep.
Okay. Now moving on to the cards in the deck. We got Gorg Tome, standard in Rune Blades for a long time. The card that jumped off. Oh, no, go ahead.
No, Rune Blades. Just Rune Blades specifically care about non attack actions. So,
well, playing non attack, yeah.
And Briar are the 2 that want it. Florian, Aurora, and Chain never really played Gorg Tome because it doesn't really do anything for them.
Briar did.
Yeah, Viscerai and Briar. Because Briar cares about playing 2 non attacks to get an embodiment of lightning. So, Gorg Tome was half an embodiment of lightning.
And Chain didn't, because why would he need to draw extra cards? It's just baked into his ability. Come on.
Well, it's more. I think it's more didn't see play in Chain because it doesn't really accomplish anything. Versus like Viscerai, it turns on your hero ability, and Briar, it turns on half of your embodiment of lightning.
Sure. Okay. We got Maverin Skies. That older oldie but a goodie. We got it in red. We got it in yellow. And then we're replacing it in blue, just like some very smart person said, with Machinations of Dominion instead.
Yeah, Machinations blocks three. Way better than Maverin Skies, which blocks two. I love blocking three. Blocking three is great. That said, if I was going to play Maverin Skies in my deck, I would play the blue Maverin Skies, because I don't think the on-hit being yellow or red matters that much, and the flexibility of it being a blue, I think, is quite nice.
Sure. We got a lot of your favorites. You were talking about some Rune Ragey Swarms, even in yellow. We got six red.
Yeah, I got six of them.
Yeah.
Two-thirds of the way there. Nine Rune Ragey Swarm life. A lot of this deck is trying to be like lower to the ground, and
yeah, I believe it's called Cheerios Viscerai.
Cheerios. It's trying to create rune chants and use them to pay for all of the cards. It's not really really trying to pitch cards. As you see that from six blues, and these blues are like blues that you're pretty happy to cast. Machinations is like a better Maverin Skies because it blocks three and become the Arknight. Basically can turn any other card or any card into any other card. It fixes all non-attack action hands, and it can lead to, or it's very flexible and can help you set up by, if you start it with it in your opening hand, you can use it to get a Malefic Incantation. Later in the game, you can use it to get a Mordred Tide or a Swarming Gloom Veil or Revel in Rune Blood, which are just like some of your most powerful cards. And it just does everything you want for the deck. It's a blue block three. That's a really, really good card.
For sure. For sure. How do you feel about these snuff outs floating around? I think that's the most sus card if I'm looking through the list at the moment.
Yeah, I think snuff out is good against decks that aren't good at blocking you out. I think against Azalea specifically, snuff out is like an all-star, threatening to hit them for five and make them discard a card and also sacrifice the Blood Rot Pox they gave you. It's kind of juice. Yeah. I think that it can be kind of awkward because a lot of the time, if you're not able to pitch a card to do something else, suddenly you're spending your whole card to play the snuff out, and you don't really want to spend two cards on snuff out. So if you can't pitch a card and use the other resources for something, I don't love it. But unlike Creeper's turns, it can be really nice. Pitching a yellow to Creeper something and attack with snuff out is pretty good. And also the Creepers refunds your action point, which means you can play two things without Gilligan, or you can pitch a blue to Creepers and play snuff out and also attack with your weapon, which I think is another pretty good play line. But overall, it is not a card that without flaws, but it is very powerful.
Yeah, you need the on hit to go through. So yeah. And you know what, that's saying something, that I question snuff out over the card that's like six slots up in Ravenous Rabble. You know, just the casual Viscerai all-star we all come to know and love and expect in Ravenous Rabble.
Well, when you stop putting blues in your deck, Ravenous Rabble looks a lot better because it's usually attacking for four. It doesn't really work with Viscerai's hero power. Pretty awkward. It can be nice to know what card you will draw if you draw a card. There are six copies of
Drawn to the
Dark Dimension, which will lead to drawing a card. And sometimes, like, if you know that you have a non-attack on top, then Drawn can lead to some Creepers lines. Since Drawn doesn't naturally have Gilligan itself, you want two Creepers, but maybe you don't have your non-attack that you want to Creepers in, so you can play Rabble. See, oh, there's a Revel and Runeblood on top. This is perfect. I'll play Drawn now, and then Creepers Rebel. And that can come up. It still feels kind of out of place to me. I don't know. I'm sure there are some matches where you don't play it, some matches where you play it. The fact that it blocks two is also kind of awkward in Viscerai, when if you're blocking with two cards, you don't really want to keep a Ravenous Rabble. You'd rather keep one of your like good cards. But yeah, I don't know. A deck full of reds and yellows, Ravenous Rabble is not bad.
True. Any final thoughts about Viscerai?
Succumb to Temptation is a really, really powerful card. And I think is a big part of why Viscerai is able to do quite well in aggro mirrors, I think, is because you have this succumb to temptation to really disrupt them. And it's pretty hard to play around for a lot of the good aggro decks right now.
True. Very true. It's one of those cards that like gets in your head, like, oh no, I took arcane damage. Do I like block this yellow drawn to the dark dimension just in case? And it's like, well, that's like, it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation sometimes.
Yeah. And the fact that a lot of the time you're playing it, you're getting a rune chant, you're taking a card from them, and you're getting an action point, that's just like really, really powerful.
Yeah. Okay.
Moving on to the next rune blade.
Yeah, the earthy boy, the earthy rune blade. We got the lightning rune blade down the line a couple deck lists later, but now we're going to talk about the big earthy emo boy, Florian.
Yeah, guardian in disguise is what I have heard.
Yes. More. It's just because the end game of grasp into the reaping blade is just all of your blues just convert to five is really good value.
Yeah, for sure.
So I guess when we look at the equipment, nothing too crazy there. Just you got some null rune boots, plume of evergrowth if you want to buy back some key earth cards and some matchups, carapace and barkskin. Well, it's just kind of standard stuff at this point, I think.
Yeah, Barkskin for most matchups, Carapace when you want the Arcane Barrier against Kano, for example. Face Purgatory is the hat you play in most matchups. Then you have Plume for matchups where you really need to be able to pressure them or get important Earth cards back. Like, for example, Enigma, which we haven't talked about yet, but is a very relevant threat in the format, having Plume to get back maybe a Fouling or a Summer's Fall at the right time can be really nice.
For sure, for sure. Moving on to cards in deck, we got the Arcane Seeds of Life. It's crazy to me that like Red Autumn, it's 2024, Rosetta's come out. We're still putting cards like Red Autumn's Touch in our decks just because it's an Earth block three.
Yeah, three in the bottom right corner. Who knew? It's good.
Bramble Spark. I like that one. Bramble Spark's a good card. I forgot how much I liked Bramble Spark, and then somebody cast Bramble Spark against me. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, it's basically always 0/4 in this deck. You have so many earth cards and earth attack actions specifically. You can play it and then fuse it with the earth attack or the earth card that you're going to pitch to play one of your other attacks. Bramble Spark fused into Commander Conquer is really, really annoying for some decks.
Yeah, real good. Pumping anything really strong. But you know what doesn't pump attacks or anything is Channel the Millennium Tree. That only pumps arcane damage. I'm a little surprised to not see Channel Mount Heroic instead of that place, but I guess like it's the old adage of like it's hard to get a lot of value out of Channel Mount Heroic if you're not going super wide, and at least this arcane damage has some evasion attached to it. So if decks aren't bringing, you know, multiple pieces of arcane barrier into you, you're just getting that damage pushed through no matter what. I guess maybe it's an earth block three, so yeah.
Yeah, being an Earth block three, but the biggest reason I think you play Channel the Millennium Tree over Channel Mount Heroic is because of Enigma. Because dealing this, like your rune chant dealing 4 arcane damage means it's clear in that ward. It's clear in at least 3 ward because Enigma can't really afford to play AB4 against you. It can't even afford to really play AB more than one AB against you. Or I guess it could if it really wanted to, but it's pretty costly. And the only times you're ever going over 1 arcane damage is with these Channel the Millennium Trees. Mm-hmm. And I think against Enigma specifically, this card actually gives Florian a lot of equity where like you kind of talked about some of the problems of new against Enigma is they everything's going fine. You're able to make value trades with them. You're probably like winning the value trades until one turn they stick a bunch of ward. And if you don't clear it, they're going to go plus a million. So having these Channel the Millennium Trees, you can also get them back with Plume to really push that high amounts of arcane damage and break through Enigma's ward is really important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, moving on. Command and Conquer, classic, Earth form, 3/7, get embodiment of Earth. Seems good to me.
Yeah, 2 if Florian's turned on.
Oh, yeah, true. Some E-Strikes, Felling of the Crown. Felling of the Crown, this is like the first card they premiered in like the set, right? It was like this in like Chain of Lightning Valley. I can see why they premiered it with Felling of the Crown. This card's real good.
Yeah. It's a 3/8. I don't know anyone who would want to play 3/8 in constructed. Don't know. Never heard of that being good. On top of that, if you decompose, both players have to put a card from their hand on the bottom. you, as the attacker, you can have blocked the other two cards and then play this, or you can do something else with it. For example, play a Malefic Incantation or play a Bramble Spark beforehand and then put your other card to play this, or you actually can grasp even. Yeah. There's lots of ways to get cards out of your hand before you play this, and then you play this and then you're like, oh, I don't have any cards, but your opponent still has to put a card from their hand on the bottom of their deck. So kind of that old Codex symmetry that's not actually symmetrical.
Yeah, classic. And then Rootbound Carapace, more decomposed cards, but playing that not only in red but also yellow. So lots of dereacts to be able to like handle the aggression from, well, not only aggro decks, but also decks like new with playing those attack reactions.
Yeah, and in matchups where you don't want Summer's Fall, then it's really hard to get your first decompose done, because Falling of the Crown and Plow Under, you don't really want to play until you have at least one Earth card in your banish zone, because they both get +4 power. If there's four or more Earth cards in your banish zone, they can only put three by themselves. So having Rootbound Carapace in your deck lets you kind of get that full value on defense and decompose and get that done to turn on Falling of the Crown and Plow Under.
Yeah. And then a little weird, I guess it's not too weird, but because there are the copies of Malefic Incantation floating around, but I guess I wouldn't naturally think to necessarily put Swarming Gloomveil in Florian, but just a good card, I guess.
Yeah, it's good, especially when you need to go wide. A lot of the time it's a 0/3 go again in Florian, where you go like Grass, Swarming Sword. And if your hero power is turned on, then Grass gives it +1. So it activates the two modes. Then you get a 0/4 go again, which is quite good. It also blocks three, very important. If it blocked two, I don't think most Florian decks would want it, but the fact that it blocks three does quite a bit.
Yeah, for sure. Yellows, we talked about the Rootbound Carapace, and then obviously Plow Under as well, the new Majestic. More symmetrical effects, quote unquote.
Yeah, I think Plow Under is reasonably worse than Falling of the Crown, but still quite a good card. Very happy to play a 2/6 that blows up their arsenal. That sounds a little familiar, actually. A 2/6 that blows up their arsenal.
Then we're moving on. Once again, All-Star, Autumn's Touch, some Dread Triptych, Earth's Embrace. I'm a little surprised that this and... sometimes it's not in this list, but there's the one that like it's just the two block, and then when it blocks, you create a might token. I guess blocking with that and then going like Command and Conquer is like kind of the idea, or like this on hit, but I don't know. You need the Earth cards, and not a lot of Earth cards block for three, I guess. That's kind of where it ends up at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's a little bit awkward that that card isn't actually a non-attack action, so because it's a block card, so it doesn't get buffed by your Embodiments of Earth, which the deck's really relying on Barkskin and the Millennium Tree to create those Embodiments of Earth to help it stay healthy and alive. Mm-hmm. So you really want as many non-attack actions as possible to block with.
Yeah. Constructed All-Star card, Germinate. That's clearly one of the top 10 most powerful cards in the set, floating around, three copies of it. And to go with that Germinate, if you want to know what you want to do with those million rune chants, you want to Loom and Doom them. Loom and Doom.
Yeah, I really think the Looming Dooms are just kind of here because they're non-attack action that blocks three. But I'm sure there's spots where it's nice. Against Enigma, for example, they usually, again, only play AB1, and you can kind of Looming Doom them if the game goes long, and this kind of helps deal with their ward pretty reliably, and is also just a clock that they don't really have a good answer to.
Yeah, for sure. And... my favorite new card in the set, Seeds of Tomorrow, floating around here. Love Seeds of Tomorrow. You love to see it. Nothing really helps tie up an endgame against Florian like Seeds of Tomorrow when you're playing new. You know, they make a million rune chants. You say, I'll arsenal this, and then you push your chi, and then you banish a card off the top of their deck, and then you play their Seeds of Tomorrow, and you eat up 5 arcane damage with one card. Feels real good.
Yeah, I saw you do that. It was rude. Sorry, that seems really strong.
Yeah, a lot of people think Florian is a bad matchup for new. I think it is if you don't know what the matchups. I guess like I approach it in that I'm just going to fatigue the Florian, and that they're not going to be able to kill me with Germinates and things like that, because I just won't give them the space at the end of the game. And between Mask of Recurring Nightmares and Use Hero Ability, like, it's pretty easy to run them out of cards as long as you stay healthy throughout the game. And the cards like Seeds of Tomorrow really help you close things out and stay healthy. So keep having that card in your deck, Florians. Thank you. And Summer's Fall and Warmonger's Diplomacy. Boom.
Yeah, Warmonger's Diplomacy, once again, three of. Very good in the metagame right now. Good against Dash.io, good against Viscerai, good against Azalea. There's a lot of heroes that don't want to see Warmonger's Diplomacy that are fairly common.
So, Florian, I think you said he's kind of like a guardian, but guardians have been unplayable. This is like a guardian that can maybe sometimes have a decent Enigma matchup and just kind of be more, not disruptive, but the split between physical and arcane goes a long way.
Yeah, and notably, the split between physical and arcane, Enigma can kind of use Phantasmal Footsteps to kind of deal with that split against a lot of the like smaller aggro decks. Like if you look at both Aurora and Viscerai, they can kind of get, like you can kind of do some Arcane Barrier and do some Phantasmal Footsteps against them. But Florian, if you try to use Arcane Barrier and Phantasmal Footsteps, well, most of his attacks have six or more power, so your footsteps just die.
Yeah. Not a good exchange there.
Yeah. I do think Florian still isn't great into Enigma, but he does have the tools to be better than Guardians into Enigma. He has Summer's Fall helps a lot, and Channel the Millennium Tree helps a lot. And then just having this hat, this Plume of Evergrowth that can kind of revive these his really powerful attacks is also a lot of equity.
100%. All right. We've kept alluding to Enigma. We kept saying how Enigma's bullying everybody. Let's talk about Enigma.
All right. So we have Liam Canning took down a ProQuest. This was actually week one on October 6th, week one of ProQuest.
Yeah, a little bit of an older list, but an oldie but a goodie. So Meridian Pathway, Phantasmal Footsteps, and Silent Stilettos for feats. Traverse the Universe because, of course.
Card's very, very good. Probably yeah. Best hat in the game still.
So obviously we've now seen the crazy power level of Calming Gesture. How do you feel about Calming Gesture so far in the format?
It's a card that I actually, when I read this card, I was just like, oh, okay, a slightly better Null Rune Gloves. But it actually turns out you can just play it in most matchups, and you combine it with an Astral Etchings to build your own Spectral Manifestation if you want. And then even similarly threatening is you can have it on your Mirror Guy turn where you use it.
Yeah, that's the real rub.
To let you play your Astral Etching as an instant and then put the Astral Etchings on the Mirror Guy because you have a Spectral Shield in play, so your Astral Etching can be played as an instant, and you just get six extra damage on your Mirror Guy and also three more ward because it has ward equal to the number of plus one counters on it.
Yeah. And if you can't kill it, game's over. Whee!
Yeah. Though a lot of the time that was true even if you only had
yeah, four but now it's even more true.
Yeah, when it's attacking for 14 instead of 8, you really, really need to be able to kill this thing.
Uh-oh. I didn't realize this when I first loaded this list. Wee woo, wee woo, wee woo. It's a Count Your Blessings deck.
Yep. 9 copies of Count Your Blessings. I think that Count Your Blessings in Enigma makes you reasonably worse in the mirror, but a lot of your other matchups, I don't think actually get worse from including it. I think that a lot of decks, if you're a block heavy Enigma, you can buy a lot of time with Count Your Blessings and you can really punish decks that just can't keep the pressure up on you.
Maybe it helps shore up her notoriously bad Viscerai matchup to some degree.
Potentially. I do think that that matchup isn't the matchup that's most improved by Count Your Blessings because, like, you can usually just spend your cards blocking efficiently against Viscerai anyway, whether you're pitching them to block arcane damage or just blocking physical attacks. And he also has Reaping Blade, which can make some turns with Count Your Blessings kind of awkward. So I guess you're probably not ahead all the time, but and it can kind of punish setup turns, but it can be a pretty big liability at times as well. I think that it mostly does help in matches where you're just trying to fatigue. So maybe that is best against Viscerai. I'm not exactly sure. I haven't spent a lot of time testing Count Your Blessings Enigma. I've been busy testing
things like Count Your Blessings. Yeah, this was an early list, like we talked about.
Very weird things.
Yeah, and it's really fallen out of favor, I would say, especially after Pablo won the calling and beat up a bunch of Count Your Blessings Enigma. It really has not been a style of Enigma I've seen a lot of since.
Yeah. Since Pablo's victory.
Yeah.
It's really
he didn't finish hard. Second place. He's dedicated, so he got first.
It's really hard to bring a version of the deck that's like way, way worse in the mirror. Like a lot of the time, like I will rule out bringing a hero because it's bad Enigma matchup. And so taking your Enigma deck and just making it have a bad Enigma matchup feels like if Enigma's 15 to 20% of the format, that's just like a huge equity loss in your tournaments.
Yeah, true. Got hard to find all. Who doesn't love hard to find all?
Another blue no block.
Yeah, pretty much this seems to have gone. Does it say gain life? Yes, it goes in the deck for the most part. You got Oasis Respites, got Sigil of Solace, got Heart of Findall. It's all of it. You gain as much life as possible.
Yeah, it's funny. I think that Heart of Findall is like a really interesting way to juice what's the zero cost instant called? Drop in the ocean. Not drop in the ocean. Poison the well.
Why?
Because let's say I cast Count Your Blessings and you try to poison the well and I do something else in response by pitching my Heart of Findall, then I will gain one life, or not in response, I let the poison the well resolve and then respond to my own thing. I gain one life. Poison the well is like, you don't gain that life, you lose a life, and then my Count Your Blessings heals me for like 8.
That is cute. Huh. You have to be behind for that play to work, but yeah, that is really cool.
Yeah, you do.
All right. Enigma, do you think it'll go up, down, stay about the same? How are you feeling about Enigma going forward in this format?
I think Enigma is still very, very good. I think it's a good home for Warmonger's Diplomacy, which we see zero copies of in this list, which is surprising to me because I think that Warmonger's Diplomacy is at a good spot and quite good in Enigma. It fits your play pattern of like wanting to make some ward and then play something disruptive. We do still see 3 Command and Conquers. We don't really see any other disruptive attacks in this deck, but that's because it's taking a more defensive fatigue route, which makes me kind of a little bit suspicious of Command and Conquer even being in the deck if it's the only one doing that.
Yeah.
That's your opponent just has armor. They're like, oh, finally, an on hit. I can use my armor. So, yeah, I think Enigma is really strong right now. I think that if you can get the Dio matchup to a reasonable spot and the Viscerate matchup to a reasonable spot, I think that Enigma is probably the best deck. I think those are probably your two hardest matchups.
And Zen.
Maybe. I don't know. Our games today told me otherwise.
They were literally like my first games ever on Zen. And then I fixed the deck and then I beat up Enigma afterwards.
Okay. Whatever.
If you want me to beat you up, name the time and place. I'm now a Zen master.
All right, come to New Jersey. We can play.
Okay.
I'm going to be in New Jersey next week.
Sounds good. I think Enigma is unplayable. I don't think anybody should play Enigma ever, especially not at Worlds. If you're registering for a deck list at Worlds, don't register Enigma. I think it'd be a huge mistake. I think it's pretty much F- tier, probably worse than Betsy and Riptide and all the other unplayable heroes, definitely worse than all of them. Nobody should play Enigma ever, and especially not at Worlds, like I said. So,
yeah. On a completely unrelated note to what you just said, are you still leading new for Worlds?
What? No, yeah, but that's completely unrelated. I just said I was testing Zen. I wasn't testing Zen because I was so tired of losing all my games into Enigma testing new. Why would I do such a thing? She's unplayable and can't beat anything.
Yeah. I do think Enigma is one of my top decks for Worlds, and I think there is still a chance I play Enigma instead of Viscerai. I'm definitely leaning Viscerai, but I like Enigma a lot, and I think she's actually really, really strong right now. So,
fair.
Yeah.
Yes, we'll have to see.
Yep.
All right. Last but not least, the most winningest hero of all of the ProQuest season, taking down the most ProQuest so far, is Aurora.
Yeah, I think it might be least. I don't think Aurora is very good, but we can talk about it.
The numbers at the say Aurora at the top. I thought when you count up all the people and all the heroes that have won ProQuest, Aurora was at the top.
Yeah, That's fair. I think Aurora reminds me of like the Briar decks back before they had Channel Mount Heroic, back when I played Oldheim and before Plunder Run got banned. But it's just like missing having a good hero power, having a good, well, it has a pretty good weapon, but not Rosetta Thorn good, and having a good hero, not having a good hero power, and not having as strong of card quality as that Briar deck kind of had. And I think like it's very, very targetable, but I guess we should talk about the specific list first.
Okay. Got a bunch of Runeblade equipment in it. We got Aether Ironweave, the Crowns, make some gold, Dominion and Providence, Carapace, Tunic, Grasp, Greaves, Charmers, Snaps, Starfall. Okay.
Yep. The Crown of Dominion and Aether Ironweave feel a little out of place in this deck, but it's, of course, to support the Arc Lightning Flicker Wisp combo.
Yeah. Which is present here. You get the 9 yellow power package. I guess Flicker Wisp by itself isn't necessarily a power package, but it combos super well with Arc Lightning. So you got the Arc Lightning channel, Lightning Valley, Flicker Wisp right there in the yellows.
Yep. Most of the deck's red, but we can talk about the blues real quick since we skipped to yellows. For blues, we have the 9 lightning blues that you kind of, that I've kind of come to expect, at least Heaven's Claws, Current Funnel, and Sigil of Lightning. Though I actually have found Sigil of Lightning can be pretty awkward in Aurora, because if you draw 2 blues and you want to play out your Sigil of Lightning, then you're spending your other blue to Sword Swing, and usually you want to spend it to make an embodiment of Lightning, but when you play Sigil of Lightning, then you're like being redundant on the embodiments of Lightning, so it doesn't like fit the curve very well.
Yeah, and it's also awkward because you do want those instants in your deck for things like Gone into Flash and Lightning Greaves, so it's hard to find good blue lightning cards. Maybe eventually Blink starts taking the place over it, depending on how this shake out, but yeah.
Yeah, I personally prefer Blink. I think it plays really well with Gone into Flash, where you play your Blink, you play your Gone into Flash, and then you play Blink, pick it right back up, and you have an action point to play to get if you want.
Mm-hmm. And some Poison the Wells, some Warmonger's Diplomacies.
Yeah. And then red, it has basically every 0/4 you can imagine, 3 copies of Electromagnetic Somersault to get back your 0/4s. And I think the average block value in this deck is like 1.5 or something.
It does not block well.
Yeah. So Command and Conquer, very good against this deck.
Weakest Link, very good against this deck. Erase Face. Pretty good against this deck. They care about playing lightning cards quite a bit. So if you go Erase Face and they have their Arcanic Shockwave, Flicker with Spark Lightning, Starfall all lined up. Not anymore, they don't.
Yeah. The one thing that this deck does have going for it, I think, is it does have a pretty good equipment suite. Runeblades have basically always had a pretty good equipment suite. It fell off a little bit, but the new Lightning Greaves kind of help in decks that can't really use Spellbound Creepers that well, which I think Aurora is a deck that doesn't really take advantage of Spellbound Creepers, but getting Lightning Greaves as just the block one that you can use to convert to action point or two later on is nice. And then there's also Snapdragon Scalers, of course, to combine with your 0/4s.
Yeah. So let me hit you with something. This deck doesn't block well, but so, you know, against certain matchups, especially ones that like have attack reactions or you want to be covering up specific breakpoints, maybe look to like a handful of defense reactions. Well, this one, new Aurora has been playing Sigil of Suffering, the 0/3 that goes up to 4 if you've dealt the arcane damage, because it combos so well with Channel Lightning Valley. Because Channel Lightning Valley says on the first time you deal damage on a turn, either your opponent's or your own, you draw a card. So Sigil of Suffering becomes this broken card of deal damage, block 4, and draw a card. But I feel like good players just are starting to like leave up a resource on a lot of their lines just to like not get got by that. And it makes that whole play kind of really embarrassing at that point.
Yeah, I do think it's at its best against aggro decks that don't really want to play Arcane Barrier against you. So if Dio, for example, is on the Banish Shoes instead of the Arcane Barrier Shoes, or Viscerize Non-Vexing Cool Hand instead of playing Grasp to block out your on-hits, and Aurora does present a lot of relevant on hits, so having good blocking armor is pretty important to her, then it's harder for these decks to really manage being able to prevent that damage because they want to play blocking armor against Aurora and they don't have like the time. They're not just like blocking out a lot. They kind of feel like forced to attack into it or feel inclined to attack into it. So I think those are the matchups that it's at its best.
Yeah, I agree. All right. So how do you feel about Aurora overall going into Worlds? Do you think it'll fall off a little bit? Do you think its time in the sun was really just being this premier aggro deck for the first couple of weeks? And now that people are kind of figuring out, getting wides to its shenanigans, it's time for it to start maybe falling off a little bit? Or do you think it's just like going to hold its own in the face of Dio and the other aggro decks still?
I think Flesh and Blood players have traditionally loved just attacking with 0/4s over and over again. And this deck is very good at doing that. If you want to be attacking with 0/4s, this is the deck for you. That is not what I want to be doing when I play Flesh and Blood. I like it when my cards can block 3 and can be more flexible than this. And that said, I do think this deck will be quite popular. I think that you should expect to probably play against 1 or 2 Auroras if you play 9 rounds of CC at Worlds. And it wouldn't surprise me if one squeaks into the top 8.
Okay, that's fair. I'd be a little surprised to see one in top 8. I guess I was kind of leading my own question where I do think it was kind of like the good aggro deck in weeks 1 and 2 because the pieces all kind of make sense. You just put the 0/4s, the good lightning cards in it, bada bing, bada boom, you got a deck. And its win rate has fallen off over between week 1 and week 2. I think it won 5 less between the first 2 weeks. So we'll see. Especially if decks like Enigma can start figuring out the matchup more. If that matchup's not good for Aurora, then I don't really see why you want to be playing Aurora. So yeah, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I do think that maybe one of the biggest reasons to play Aurora is it's like ninjas aren't very good right now. I know you've talked about Zen. I don't think Zen's in a great spot either. He has a pretty good Viscerai matchup and is pretty bad into everything else. Where Zen states aren't preventing 10 plus damage every time you make one.
Yeah, I would say he might be okay into Dio, but I don't know.
Maybe.
I mean, Zen states are pretty good if Dio's like trying to attack me with like 10 attacks in a turn and shaves one off all the boom grenades and it makes the gun attack for one less. I think Zen states are pretty good into Dio.
Yeah, that is fair. I have been very underwhelmed with Zen's damage outputs. I think he has big chase to tail turns, and unless Zen State is doing some very, very heavy lifting and these aggro mirrors, which I think it does against Viscerai, and I think he's quite good against Viscerai, I'm basically trying to say I think that Aurora might be the best Warmonger's Diplomacy aggro deck because I think the ninjas aren't in a great spot.
That's fair.
So if you want to be an aggressive deck with Warmonger's Diplomacy, then Aurora seems like the place to be.
You just play Warmonger's Diplomacy, and then you say war, and then you draw Burn Up, Shock, Arc Lightning, Flicker Wisp. Got him.
I had something similar to that happen to me at a Pro Tour.
I know, that's why.
My Pro Quest. It was double Burn Up Shock, but yeah.
That's just going to happen sometimes, I guess. The dangers of putting Warmonger's Diplomacy when you're still running like a bunch of non-attack actions.
Yeah, which this deck is running not a ton. It's definitely much less than most Runeblades in the past have ran, but it does have a chunk of non-attack actions. So.
All right. Any final thoughts on the meta as a whole before we start packing up and leaving for Worlds here?
Well, we got another week before our trip to Worlds. But...
Well, we're going to talk about our decks next week, although... Yeah. I'm thinking about just flipping a coin for my deck. We'll see. We'll see how...
Between new and Zen.
Yeah. Probably one of the two of them. We'll see.
Yeah. Could play Enigma too. Enigma's pretty good.
Probably newer Zen, I would say. I'll flip a coin between
just,
the two
just,
of them.
Just, you know, all the Mystic Heroes in the world.
I think if any Mystic Hero is a good choice for the tournament, but we'll see.
I think one Mystic Hero is a good choice for the tournament. And it's neither the ones in your coin flip. Anyway. I expect a lot of Enigma, a lot of Viscerite, a lot of Dio, and some of a bunch of other decks.
Well, the next time you're trying to decide between a bunch of other decks to play at Worlds, always remember, mind your manner. And on.